Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hello, I'm David Maister. This series of 15 podcasts is called Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. It's designed to help people who have the responsibility for managing a group of professionals. This episode, the fourth in the series, is called How Managers Should Spend Their Time, and is based on my book, Managing the Professional Service Firm, as well as my book, First Among Equals, co-authored with Patrick McKenna. In the first episodes, I discuss the power of one-on-one coaching. However, coaching is a time-consuming activity, and many managers ask how much time they should be spending in that activity. In this episode, I want to examine what a manager of professionals can and should spend time on. So, you're the manager of your group. Your goal is to help, but what do you actually do to accomplish this? I'm going to name some activities, and as you listen to them, ask yourself, which of these activities are most likely to raise the enthusiasm, excitement, and performance of others? Which of these activities do those you're trying to lead accept as a valid activity they agree you should perform them? And then finally, which of these activities do your superiors expect you to perform? Do you actually have a mandate to do them? And of course, you probably want to ask things I've left off the list. But let's start on the list. Number one, spend unscheduled informal time with individual people, senior or junior, serving as a coach to help them develop themselves in their practice. Number two, actually be knowledgeable about the development of people and be ready to suggest reassignments between projects in order to give people the chance to build their skills and advance their careers. Number three, be in touch with the clients of your group members to help your group members grow their relationships with their clients, to monitor the client satisfaction that's being delivered by your team members, and to act as a conscience for everyone to excel at client satisfaction. Help members of your team differentiate themselves from other competitors in meaningful ways that clients recognize and value. Be the friendly skeptic. Help people to stay current with the trends affecting the industries they serve, the changes that will affect these clients, and their demand for the group services. Have knowledge that actually helps your team members. Next, I think I'm up to six, you could monitor the profitability of the jobs that the people in your group are doing, and you could discuss the financial results with them. Next, as the group leader, you could make sure that methodologies were being devised to capture and share knowledge that's being acquired while you're serving the clients, and making sure that that knowledge is being disseminated within the group and perhaps across your firm. Number eight, help your group explore new and innovative ways of using technology better to deliver services. In other words, as the manager, not only focus on getting the work done, but finding ways to be more efficient, effective, and productive. Next, we're up to an activity you could spend time recruiting, interviewing, attracting potential recruits, either junior people or senior lateral hires, as they're called. Spend time following up and actively helping your members execute their planned activities. Be their conscience. Number 11. Initiate and run collective meetings to plan the group's activities and the initiatives for the coming quarter. Number 12 is you could spend time conducting formal performance appraisals of your people for the purposes of compensation. And then you could conduct counseling sessions with people on the basis of these performance appraisals. You could spend time celebrating individual and group achievements, the minor wins, not just the home runs, the good try, not just the grand successes. Now, you'll immediately see that this long list of possible activities are all very time intensive. In fact, I suggest that as an exercise, you estimate how many hours in a year each of these activities would take, given the size of your group and the nature of your group's activities. You'll probably find that there is not enough time to do all of these possible things. You will have to choose. And then, of course, you face a really difficult choice. Will you try to do them all to a middling or average level, or will you try to do a selected few superbly? You'll guess from the way I've structured that my recommendation is the latter. Pick a few things, a few ways of defining your role, and then do those ways superbly. A group manager does not have to do all of the items I've discussed here. There are many versions of being effective. However, if the group and the manager are to succeed, it is necessary to agree and write down the manager's role, responsibilities, accountabilities, and the performance measure on you, the manager. You need to come to an agreement both with those you supervise and those you report to. It's remarkable how infrequently this is done. The single biggest and most certain source of failure for you as a group manager is not having an agreement in advance about the job you should be performing. If people don't know what you're supposed to be doing as a coach, they will reject your influence. Since many professional firms, and by the way, professional groups within corporations, do not have a history of activist group managers, it's essential that to arrive at precisely the answers to the questions about your role, you may need to start from scratch. You may think that everybody understands your role, but I've learned that it's safe to assume that whilst each individual person may be absolutely clear on what you should be doing, there are as many different views as there are individual people you must deal with. What all this reveals is that practice managers can be valuable by helping professionals act and understand their real priorities. That's what we've said so far in all of their podcasts. Left to their own devices, bright, energetic people will look after today. Practice managers are needed, most of all, to be the guardians of the long term. They're valuable when they act as the conscience of their colleagues, not necessarily in giving them new goals, but helping them achieve the goals they have set for themselves. The manager's role is to be the reminder, the coach, the supporter, as individuals struggle to balance today's pressure with longer-term accomplishments. This is not necessarily easy. Of everyone in the firm, it's usually the manager who's most familiar with and must deal with today's financial results. There is thus a danger, rarely resisted, that the manager can become the most short-term oriented individual in the group rather than the most long-term oriented. And this is a disaster. You don't need a coach to make people look after the short-term. The best indicator of the orientation of managers is to look at how they spend their time. A manager's time can be divided into five categories. Number one, administrative and financial matters, looking at the numbers, preparing the reports, dealing with the bureaucracy. Number two, as a manager, you can spend time doing client service work, actually serving clients. Billable work is what some firms call it. The third thing you can spend your time on is personally generating business, personal marketing and selling. Category four, I'm going to call general client relations. And please notice, I've separated it out from billing activities, which is doing things for fee. And I've also separated it out from marketing and selling. What I mean by client relations is where you go to visit the clients of other people in your group in order to talk to them in a non-selling fashion about, first of all, are they getting everything from your group that they want? You're doing a quality assurance conversation. And secondly, you have conversations with the clients about what else is going on in their world. You are effectively role modeling how to grow a relationship for the person that is serving that client. The fifth category of the place you can spend your time is dealing with and talking to the senior professionals and the junior professionals in the group. Now, I invite you to think, where is the manager's greatest opportunity to really make a difference in the performance of the group? Which of these five activities really has influence? As pressing as financial and administrative matters can be, they actually are not the points of high impact from a long-term perspective. Administration is what I call hygiene. It is very, very important, but I don't need the highest paid person in the group to do it. I need somebody to be anal retentive and to watch the pennies, but I can hire somebody at a fairly modest cost to look at all the reports and fill in all the columns. If good administration is not done well, it can hurt the practice, but outstanding administration never promotes the future success of the practice. It must be taken care of, but it does not build for the future. Practice managers must find ways to get the administration performed with quality without consuming all of their own precious time. Virtually every manager should have a high-powered administrative officer to whom administrative and financial matters can be delegated. In almost all cases, such a person would be self-funding. since the time freed up for the practice manager to apply to high-value tasks would be worth much more than the cost of the administrative officer. Any practice manager spending more than, say, 10% of his or her time on administrative or financial managers is being an administrator, not a manager, and ought to cut their pay by 80%. What of doing professional work, actually serving clients yourself? Is this a necessary activity for a practice manager to do in order to manage well? Well, to a certain extent. Managers, in order to have the credibility to lead, must continue to earn the professional respect of those they are hoping to influence. They must also ensure that they're not isolated from the current marketplace. And yet it's clear that just serving your own clients yourself is not a highly leveraged use of a manager's time. It doesn't actually have a big impact on the performance of others. There's only a limited opportunity to help and influence others in the office when doing this. So how much of this must the manager do in order to retain the respect of colleagues and remain in close contact with the marketplace? Answers vary by profession and by country and by firm. But it could be argued that if it's the right kind of work, a manager can continue to demonstrate value as a professional by being no more than 10 to 20% client service work, chargeable if that's the way you do it. The credibility you earn in the eyes of your colleagues is based more upon the nature of the work you do, whether you're actually helpful when they get into trouble, than earning credibility by working harder than they do. Doing professional work is fulfilling and fun, and coaching others is not always so, but one must recognize which is the true building activity which will grow your group. A similar line of reasoning applies to new business development, or marketing or selling. The manager must be involved in this to earn the respect of others, yet a manager adds the most values not by selling himself or herself, but by teaching others how to sell. That's the leverage in the managerial role. Now, we've got to recognize that as the leader of the group, there are forms of business and community activities that a new client or a new relationship want to see the senior manager there. The other professionals cannot do it as well if they don't have the leader of the practice there. In such a situation, we bring you in on the golden chariot with the dancing girls and the music, and we show you to the prospective client to show that our management really wants the new business. And then, of course, we turn around back to the proposal. And yes, you know, the manager needs to be there for that. A good rule of thumb for all of this, by the way, is that a manager should do what only the manager can do. But if, in fact, it could be delegated, it could be done by somebody else, then it is in the group's interest for the manager to help other people learn how to do it well. Only by building the skills in others is the manager really building the group. The manager's role is to be a teacher first and a doer second. Both are needed, but the priorities must be clear. Time spent dealing with your colleagues is, as I've discussed above, a very high impact activity if done well. Helping others solve their problems, helping them keep their priorities straight, helping them set stretching goals for themselves. These are the activities that produce results beyond what people would accomplish if left to their own devices. Whereas I recommend only about 10 or 15% for the marketing topic that I've just covered, the best coaches spend about 30 to 60% of their week working with people within the group. That's where they really make a difference if they know what they're doing. What of client relations, one of the other categories we talked about? It's important to note that as used here, client relations is, as I observed, separate both from business development and personal client work. The client visits that I'm referring to are not meant to be going behind the backs of the senior professionals who are responsible for the client relationship. You'd usually suggest to the senior professionals, let's go have lunch with your client. Let me go help you with your relationship. This activity is immensely valuable. Spending time with existing client executives on top of what the senior professionals are already doing goes a long way in cementing relationships, assuring client satisfaction, and uncovering new business issues with the client decision makers. Of course, the visits also act, as I said, a powerful quality assurance function. If a manager can use time and position to support senior professionals in this area, it will have a highly leveraged impact. I think it should be a slavish 20% of every manager's week, one day a week you go visit clients. I promise you, it will force everybody else to raise their game. The percentages given above are not, of course, absolutes. For example, a manager in a very large practice may have so much opportunity to make an impact in client relations and coaching that it may in fact be sensible for him or her to reduce personal client service to zero, establish and retaining credibility solely through assisting others. It's a tough choice, but in a large enough group, it may be necessary. Some managers reviewing the five categories of activity, but where's the time for doing strategy, for planning, or for sitting alone and thinking? I believe strongly in the following catchphrase, that a manager sitting alone is not managing. Strategy and planning are not distinct from the activities that I have described above. If the manager is active in visiting clients to discuss their emerging issues and active in meeting with senior professionals individually or in small groups, then the strategic task will be well executed. Let's turn to the question of, is the time spent in doing this coaching economic? While practice leaders often understand the importance of their role, they don't always act upon it. When working with managers, I often ask the question, if you had an extra day a week to spend on increasing the success of your group, what would you do with that day? Most people readily agree that performing the activities that I've discussed, visiting clients and working with individuals, would make a significant difference to the success of their practice. Then why don't you spend that day a week, I say? Too busy, comes the reply. We've got to stay chargeable or billable or do our own client service work. But let's do the arithmetic on this argument. Let's examine a manager who, just for the sake of discussion, is responsible for a group containing 10 senior professionals with total revenues of, I don't know, $8 million, just to make up a number, and a profit of, let's say, $3 million. Naturally, you should substitute your own numbers in this example. One day a week would represent 20% of the practice manager's time. Let's assume a 2,500-hour year. This translates into 500 fewer hours. And let's assume that the manager keeps up all the activities, including business development, but takes the 500 hours to be spent on coaching directly from client service. Still is responsible for serving the same clients, but now serves them by using an assistant on the job. So the manager is not withdrawing from the marketplace, is delivering services in a more leveraged way. Now to do the arithmetic, assume the manager's billing rate is, to pick a number, $400 per hour. So 500 fewer billing hours times $400 per hour means a cost of $200,000. So what is the probability that with the one day a week we've now created for that manager, week in, week out, throughout the year, to focus on managing an $8 million business generating $3 million in profit, what's the probability that the manager could recoup an investment of $200,000? If the practice manager has any skill whatsoever, the probability should be very high, approaching 99.9999%. It might even be considering having the coach manage for 2 days a week. Either you're going to get a great return, or that person should not be the leader of the group. What this analysis attempts to show that it is clearly more economic for the manager to help other people become more successful, or even more successful than they already are, rather than focusing on his or her own activities. The manager's job is not to be the most successful practitioner in the group, nor its best salesperson. The upside on that is inherently finite and limited. Instead, the real job is to go where the leverage is to help multiple numbers of other people succeed as practitioners and business generators. This has been How the Manager Should Spend Time, the fourth episode in my 15-part series, Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. In future episodes, I'll look at the topics of the characteristics of an effective manager, how to deal with underperformers and difficult team members, and how to forge a team out of autonomous professionals. If you'd like more information or access to other podcasts in this series, or the previous series, Marketing Professional Services, go to my website, davidmaester.com. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set, from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.